Excellent. An ale for me. And for my officers. In fact, ales for everyone.
Oh. 10 backward. With Rick and Rick and Will and Gemma.
Oh, yes.
Hello and welcome to 10 Backward, a UK-based Star Trek podcast. Featuring myself, Will Turland, this lady to the left of me, Gemma Turland.
Hello.
And a man to the further left of me, Rick Everson.
Hello.
And a man to the extreme left, or perhaps right of me, Rick Palmer.
Hey, hey.
Yeah. Shall we go straight into the first episode of...
Brother.
Yes. Star Trek Discovery Season 2.
Yeah.
I really liked it.
I did.
Me too. Yeah, yeah, I thought it was good.
Yeah.
Okay, done. Podcast over. Thanks for listening. I'm sure we can elaborate a little bit more.
I just thought it was great. It felt great to be back in the world of Star Trek Discovery.
It did.
It felt really familiar. The characters were all kind of warm and welcoming, and it was a lot of fun. It looked fabulous. It looked like a movie.
There was almost,
I thought it looked.
There was almost like a comfortable confidence about the whole episode.
Yeah.
That I think it's like, we've done our first series, we've got there, you've accepted us, let's get going. And I think that really showed through. It was great. Obviously,
I mean, it picks up immediately after. Mm. Well, it would do, wouldn't it? Because season one ends with the Enterprise arriving, coming into view.
Priority one distress call.
Yeah.
Sounds pretty important. I mean, the Enterprise minor redesign looks pretty beautiful to me.
Yeah, I liked it.
It completely evokes the original. I have no issues with that at all. So, I also do like, actually, the nacelle caps evoke the NX-01 a little bit.
Yeah.
So, that's a nice thing.
I can't remember quite why. What has happened to the Enterprise? Do we find out?
Basically, Pike says complete system shutdown.
It went funny.
Yeah,
went all.
And they don't know why.
Unable to comply, Captain, Enterprise is completely offline. Except for life support. Scans show 203 crew members aboard. The vessel's entire complement is alive.
We're still sending a priority one distress call, but the signal's too compromised for voice transmission.
Blue screen of death, critical error.
Yeah.
I think.
Just try to. Are you trying turning it on and off again?
They should have.
They do that. Actually.
They should have opened up
they
the task manager and tried.
They do. They do that in Star Trek series. They do like a
contagion.
Complete system shutdown.
Contagion. They do it. The Iconian virus. They end up just shutting down to turn it off and on again.
But, yeah.
So we pick up exactly where it is. Can't get any communication through. Captain Pike ends up beaming on board. Mm-hmm. Take command.
Not with Spock.
No.
Yeah.
Mm. They're all like Burnham and Sarah, kind of like, ooh, Spock's gonna turn up. Let's say hello to Spock.
I like
the shot from the back of the transporter chamber. So you just see the guy's ear. Yeah. It's very prominent. It's nicely done. Yeah. So you immediately see that's a rounded ear tip. It's good.
And I thought they played a bit on audience expectations then, because the audience, I think we were sort of with Burnham.
They know Spock is going to arrive eventually.
Yes.
Because he's in the trailers. So.
Yeah, we've had a casting announcement, and for goodness sake. So.
Yeah. So yeah, but they turn up. Spock isn't there. They come on board, and Pike comes on board to essentially take command.
Yeah. So let's get straight to Anson Mount as Pike. How do we like that guy's portrayal?
Oh, we like it. It's
good. About a billion percent.
He's a lovely gentleman cowboy.
Yes, indeed.
He steps off the transporter pad and says something like, "I learnt in Mojave, which was already established in the cage as Pike's hometown.
Ah, right. Okay.
So immediately we harken back with. We're showing that we know our track here.
Yeah.
That's good. I think there's just something about Anson Mount's performance that evokes everything about Geoffrey Hunter, but also makes it his own.
Yeah.
Because actually in The Cage, we never saw like a jovial Pike, but here we have a slightly jovial. We also have that seriousness.
Yeah.
And it just works.
He's kind of warmer than The Cage Pike, I think.
Yeah. But then I think what you need to do is look at Pike's situation at the beginning of the cage is like not wondering if this is the right path for him.
That's right. He has a line where he's saying, can he deal with being a starship captain anymore?
And also,
so we have to remember this is after the cage, and he's maybe those events have sort of settled him into his role a little bit.
When Geoffrey Hunter was cast as Pike, this was the pilot for Star Trek, and Gene Roddenberry's previous experience had been on that show, The Lieutenant, with a slightly stiff kind of military type character Geoffrey Hunter's portrayal of Pike definitely fits in with Gene Roddenberry's expectations of that character, and it just fits that Anson Mount's portrayal of Pike fits in with the modern sort of idea of Pike, and it's a credit that there's a connection there, I think.
So Pike gives a great speech to everyone that he is not Lorca.
Which, to be fair, Will, you pointed out, was as much for the audience as for the crew.
You may as well have turned to camera and said, guys, I'm not Lorca.
Like René Artois in Hello, Hello.
Yeah.
If I were you, I'd have my doubts about me as well. But I'm not him. I'm not Lorca.
But I think also, after everything that they went through in the previous series, Lorca was a binding force for that crew. He built them as a unit to battle Klingons, kind of thing. And then have him turn on them and betray them, and Saru to then to reunite them. In particularly, I'm thinking of Saru's speech that Discovery is not Lorca's; she is ours, and this is her maiden voyage. Mm. And so I think to suddenly have then Saru taken off out of the chair and Pike to come in, I think it's important that he did that speech. And the little bit harkens back to that first episode of Babylon 5 series 2 where Sheridan takes over and he has his little tradition about doing a speech.
And he's trying all episode to do his speech. He can't do it because they're too busy. There's too much stuff going.
Whereas I know Pike gets this speech, but just that's the whole thing about the commanding officer takes over and has to do the speech.
Yeah.
But I think it's an important one because for that crew. And then he totally ingratiates himself with everyone by doing his little roll call sound off bit.
Just
the names.
And he does a little thing where all of his details are up on screen, and he starts kind of going through like some of his failings.
Yeah. Oh, I failed astrobiology or whatever it was.
Childhood asthma and
it's not a failing.
It's not that much he could have done about that, but it's.
Yeah,
he opens himself up to the crew, isn't it? That's what
he lets them know he's a person.
How do you? Yeah, but I guess failing childhood asthma. Surely failing childhood asthma is like having good lungs.
I think he only says he failed a topic at the academy. He mentions childhood asthma as a medical. I think, and it's for the good of the audience because Pike is almost a legend. We see so little of him.
Yeah.
Because we've only seen the cage, really. Obviously, we've seen the menagerie. Where he's in a wheelchair beeping with his little orange light.
And he's in the Kelvinverse films.
But it's a very different sort of.
I think Kelvinverse Pike is a bit of a middle ground between Geoffrey Hunter and Anson Mount.
They pay tribute to Kelvinverse because when Discovery launches at warp, he does say, punch it, doesn't
he? I thought he said hit it. Does he say
hit it, sorry. Which is, it harkens back to Kelvinverse Pike anyway.
Yeah,
it's a nice nod. I would say
absolutely, but it's to us on the TV we've had so little Pike and he's almost become a legend, so to see him on screen and then we have that moment with Tilly where she's literally like giggly and can't handle she's the audience then, she is totally us coping with seeing Pike in action.
I'm Ensign Sylvia Tilly. I'm Discovery's newest addition to Starfleet's command training program.
Hi.
Yeah, you have really beautiful nail beds.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And so it's a big deal because Pike is a big figure. He's more celebrated in song and story than he ever is actually seen on screen. Mm-hmm. So to actually get some screen time with him is a big deal, and I think it's handled so well.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. And then we have the whole kind of mystery around the seven lines.
The red signals, yeah. Yeah.
Which is intriguing. We don't have an answer to that yet. It feels like that's a mystery that's going
to
run.
It feels like it's linked to the mycelium, I would say, because there's a connection, because the mycelium in the in the hold go...
Tilly does reference that, doesn't she?
There's one burst that they've been able to fix on where it happened, and they go and look. Yeah. They go and investigate it, and when they get there, the spores go kind of crazy when they arrive. So, yeah, and it would be a nice carry on from season one. It makes sense as well because the mycelium is broad enough to cover the galaxy, well, the universe, and also, the mycelium sort of goes when Stamets is navigating Discovery back into the Prime Universe from the Mirror Universe through the mycelium. It goes red when he gets nearer to coming out of it, if you see what I mean. So there's a point where he's a bit lost, and then he kind of focuses and finds a way through, and everything goes red. So
that's
conjecture, but maybe it's
So I'm wondering, now that they've followed to this fixed point, and they've saved the people in that ship, another of those points is going to come back in and fix.
Yeah.
And they're going to go there. And I wonder if they're going to rescue somebody else.
Oh.
That, because it's such a coincidence that there was someone there. Who you know, a ship that was thought destroyed.
It's unrelated to the red signal burst as well. The Hiawatha was crippled in the Klingon War. It has nothing to do with H ship, because they meet the engineer and Jet Reno, and she has no idea about the red signal burst.
But it could be that maybe there's something that's leaked. Maybe it's Spock.
Yeah.
That's leading them to.
Or something is leading them to. People, or if that was a complete coincidence, and it's the dark matter.
That's another element. That's another mystery.
Yeah,
mysterious element of it.
We get into a very action-packed sequence where there's a big old asteroid field, and they have to take some fast-moving worker bee type vehicles out into it. Try and approach the USS Hiawatha to.
They do cool sort of spinny things. It's like it feels like they built this
city on rock and roll.
This little vehicle, and they finished it. And they go, can you make it look more cool? Can you give it some kind of spinny stuff? And then it goes.
I think
this kind of stuff would exist. Wouldn't it? Like, I mean, some people might not like it because we haven't seen this before. But it's just because we are able to depict it now.
I mean, I was going to say,
you have to just get over that sort of thing, really.
It's perhaps a contrivance that they kind of happen to have
from that
four of these little ships on board.
Yeah,
they were like, oh, remember that time that we were doing a thing? We've got four of these things. It would actually fit the bill.
It would be cool if they had like those kind of mech suits to lift stuff. Those would be handy on a deck. You know, like the thing that Ripley uses to fight the alien queen in Aliens.
That'd be cool.
That would be an addition. Rather, that's not a criticism. It's like that's something I'd like to see.
But I really like that that action sequence. It's a whole lot of fun in it, and it harkens. But it really made me think of Into Darkness and the kind of space jump between the Enterprise.
Especially the bit where.
But in a good way.
There's a. Cool. Well, to be fair, I was thinking you meant. The jump in the first Star Trek movie. There's an overconfident character who gets killed.
Yes.
Olsen.
Olsen, yeah.
And in this episode, there's a jerk
yeah.
who gets
yeah.
killed.
Yeah.
Yes.
But having he gets killed. But he gets killed because he is a jerk.
He already suffered the indignity of having been sneezed on by Linus. But then he's basically too busy mansplaining to notice the massive asteroid coming at him.
Yeah.
So nobody's sorry that he got blown up.
No.
Nobody mentions him again.
No.
Thank God that guy died.
Is it Connolly or something?
I don't even care.
Yeah, he was pretty odious.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Just be cool.
But then they get down to the ship that's stranded on the asteroid.
Whoa! Let's not skip over the brilliance of the rescue sequence.
Oh yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah. Pike's vehicle takes a hit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a marvellous moment where you can see the crack going around the front of his vehicle, and Anson Mount's expression and his eyes follow that crack's movement. It's spot on. It's amazing. And then between them, Burnham, and then the two women at the Con and Ops on Discovery
form the rescue. I don't know, I'm gonna freely admit
I can't pronounce
Owashigu or something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, Joanne is her first name, so we'll just say Joanne.
Okay,
yeah.
Joanne.
But they basically between three of them perform a rescue operation. It's just spot on.
You need to trust us, sir. I told you we don't abandon each other. Discovery has you. We have him, right, ladies? Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Marvellous.
Yeah.
And so, the kind of the secondary characters get to say and do a lot more in this episode.
And you get a bit more of a sense of the characters.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think
it's like Discovery has you, and then the two of them give this panicked look, like, yeah, sure, okay.
Like ladies.
Bloody hell, I better sort something out.
Right? Yeah.
That's
some marvellous moment.
Yeah. But I think a good action sequence in a film or TV show needs to do something more than just be spectacle. It needs to have a reason to be in the story. And,
yes.
And in this case, we get Burnham and Pike kind of learning to trust each other.
Yes.
And we get, you know, Pike kind of accepts that Burnham's right and she's capable and she can.
Mm.
Rescue him, and they learn a bit about each other, and Pike kind of starts to learn to trust the Discovery crew and discover that they're capable. So you have all that stuff going on. Plus, it's visually spectacular.
Yes.
And
it's
exciting as well.
It's something. It's where something is at stake, and it convinces you that a character that definitely won't die. Could die.
Yeah.
And if it does that well, and that is really hard to do, but if it does it right, it draws you into the moment, and you're like, oh, phew, Pike's not dead. Of course he wasn't dead, but I mean,
yeah, we know what happens to Pike ultimately anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just so well done, that whole sequence.
And then we get down to the asteroid, and
yes,
everything looks great. That set looks great.
Yes,
and the effects just look great. It looked like a movie. There was kind of a movie standard visuals from this point.
Yeah,
I'm really impressed.
I get a bit. I have to admit, even though that's great, I get a bit kind of. I'm not used to that.
I'm nostalgic for the.
Well, no, it's not nostalgia. It's more. Well, I guess. Okay, I'm going to say it's not nostalgia. It's just I'm not used to that. I'm not used to that sort of thing. I like my movies to look like movies, and I know it's not like that. It's just I'm not used to that level of spectacle in a TV show. So it is a bit hard to get used to, and not in a bad way, just in a. I'm not used to it, that's all.
No, it's huge. I mean, it's really, really epic.
Mm.
The whole pitch of this episode, the whole way through, is like, we are being spoiled here,
yeah.
I think.
I think that could be part of the reason, for whatever reason, that some people aren't kind of into Discovery that much. For people that don't like Discovery, I do think that maybe it is more subtle things like this. It looks incredible, and its kind of structure is slightly different. It's like it's like kind of it puts you off balance. It's like like an equilibrium shift. It's you're used to something, and then you get this new thing, and it's not quite right, and you just don't feel comfortable with it. Now, that isn't me. I really like Discovery, but in terms of why people don't like Discovery, I think in terms of how it fits in with previous shows, is this kind of thing. It's very cinematic. It uses a lot of background music, and more than other shows did, and watching this show, it did make me think of how it is different, and I'm fine with that, but it is quite different to previous Star Trek shows.
And one of the criticisms that Discovery haters have called out is that it's kind of too flashy, and it's too flashy and actiony, and it doesn't there's not enough substance to it. But is that a legitimate complaint that something just looks
I'm not saying it as a complaint. I'm just describing it as a difference. I like it.
I think you might be right. That is something that might. People don't like things that are different from the thing that they liked. And visually it is different.
I really liked it.
I really liked it.
Yeah, me too.
We meet a Starfleet engineer.
Yes.
Engineered
Jet Reno.
She's engineered some stuff to keep the crew alive. This is kind of a leftover from the Klingon War. That's why the ship's crashed.
I thought she was great. I have to admit, there was a moment where you pan over and there's like a box with something that looks like a heart in it. I thought, what alien is that? Yeah. There was some kind of heart alien. And oh no, it's a heart.
Well, she does address the person, and she's addressing the box, isn't she?
What species is this? It's like a box alien. No, she's cool.
Yeah, I'm hoping we can see a lot more of her through the series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She could be the new... Well, no, wait, she's an engineer. She can't be the new doctor, can she?
No, she could be the new engineer, though.
Yeah.
Stamets is not essentially an engineer. He's a scientist.
Yeah,
he's got new. He's got a new lab.
He's definitely going. He's definitely going to leave the ship.
He said he's going.
He's not going.
By the
way,
did we notice the new engineering set at the background?
I didn't.
No, I didn't.
Well, yeah, where before it was a bulkhead with a round circle. Now you actually see a bit beyond, and you see some sort of glowy reactor stuff going on.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, well, that's there. You need to check out the background of the sets.
I'll check out my rewatch.
Yes. So Stamets has said that there's actually a lovely scene where he's reviewing an old letter he got from Dr. Culber. It's a little bit heartbreaking, really.
It was. I thought that was a lovely scene. But the whole, you know, that and then the conversation with Tilly and all of that emotion is still very raw.
I need you to repeat after me.
Okay.
I will say. Fewer things.
Okay. I don't want you to go.
You have to kind of remember that this episode is immediately after.
And Stamets hasn't really had time to mourn for
No, because he was killed shortly after they went into the Mirror Universe, and then they went from the Mirror Universe back home, immediately did the culmination of the war, got the medals.
War ceremony.
Yeah.
High five, you know.
But yeah, I mean, it's got to be so raw for him. Mm. So yeah. I can completely understand where he's coming from when he says he wants to leave and go take up another position. And it's kind of heartbreaking. But I don't think any of us believe that he will leave.
No.
No
way.
I think some things are going to happen. And actually, there's a point later on where they try and capture an asteroid and he comes along to help Tilly's endeavour. And she's both delighted about it. And, you know, it kind of gets a sense, well, he's still there. He's still interacting. He's still active. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
So Spock. Spock is another big plot point in this episode. So if I had one criticism this episode. I'd say there's a lot of time devoted to just pondering about Spock.
Yes.
Kind of looking whimsically into the middle distance and kind of going, Spock.
Yes.
That's okay, because that part of me thinks, like, as an audience, we know Spock is a big deal because we know that character and we know that connection with the original series. But to the characters on Discovery, is Spock a big deal?
Well, I don't think it.
Random people are not thinking about Spock.
Mm. But Burnham. Burnham is. And Burnham is our kind of the character that we're with. And yeah, okay, Spock is a big deal.
Mm-hmm. The one thing that hasn't changed. I'm not a fan of Burnham's connection to Spock. I don't think it's added anything to the show. I feel like it was probably done in order to form some sort of connection to existing canon
We can't have a new Star Trek show without a connect. Who's the pointy ear guy? A spec.
Who's that guy? Who's the green-blooded hobgoblin
over
here?
Let's say she's a spec sister.
And in this, it's kind of, yeah. There's a lot of time spent sort of with flashbacks to the Spock house and Spock being kind of not happy and
there's a bit of repetition of those flashbacks actually.
Yeah.
As well, I thought all that stuff was okay and also
it's just
a lot of it.
Where is Cybok?
Yeah.
At this point,
but
I would say
Cybok is older than Spock.
True.
But he's never mentioned.
This is the kind of thing that it sort of provokes. I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's necessary. I think if you excise the Vulcan connection that Burnham has, her character would be just as good.
And in fact,
in season one, Burnham is best when that is not a part of her story.
I kind of liked some of the stuff with her and Sarek.
Right.
I'm going to throw in some reactions
that are entirely from my point of view, so they're entirely my subjective thoughts. A, Burnham, having been raised among Vulcans, is a defining part of her character. She, when we see her in Vulcan Hello, in Battle of the Binary Stars, she has the arrogance of Vulcan logic, but none of the self-confidence. Mm. And I think that is a big thing, and that's why it leads her to question her captain and mutiny. Mm. Because she feels one way is the correct way, but she doesn't have that confidence in herself that it's her own opinion.
Mm.
It's derived from Sarek, basically. And I think this kind of defines her until she finds a place later on in the series. In terms of Burnham's connection to Spock, and ergo, therefore, Sarek, Leethi is the defining moment for that. Because Leethi not only builds that bond between Burnham and Sarek, but it also redefines that relation, or the breach of the relationship between Sarek and Spock that for 50 years we understood was based on a disapproval of Spock's career path, but wasn't actually. In Leethi, it turns out that Sarek had deliberately sabotaged his foster daughter's career choice in favour of his son's, and then his son went against that anyway, and that puts a whole new emotional slant on that argument. And I think after 50 years you find a new way to look at that relationship. I think that's an incredible point of view.
I agree that is well done. I think Leethi does a good job in terms of marrying that together. But in terms of the character, I think when the writers would have known that this kind of thing, and they would have written it that way, so So in terms of the Burnham character, you are right, but I just prefer it, the Burnham character, when her that whole Vulcan thing isn't a prime factor in what she's doing. That's all. And there's plenty of season one where Burnham isn't affected by that, and I feel that that character is a bit more. She's doing what she's good at, and I always like. There's always something for me I like about a Star Trek character, is when they're doing what they're good at and they're enjoying it, and this is kind of the same with Tilly as well. I have to admit I'm not a huge fan of the kind of giddy chatterbox Tilly. I like Tilly when she's excelling at her job, and because she can do that, and you know what I mean. Like I think sometimes it's just I feel like a character maybe has a bit. There's a bit of focus too much on aspects outside of why they're there. But that's just me.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, we all like various parts or characters or storylines for our own personal preferences and reasons. Yeah, I adore the dynamics of the family Sarek, because I think it's a massively dysfunctional relationship that whole family has. I've had discussions with my imaginary friend Niall that I dearly hope Cybok will be mentioned at some point in the series, because A, I don't want to ignore the history of Cybok there. I think it's entirely relevant as we go through. I think we're going to find out elements of Spock and his relationship to emotions that are not developed in the same way as we see in the original series, because this is going to be a defining moment between the cage where he's laughing at a musical plant and he's traditionally Vulcan in the original series. I think
it would be cool if Discovery met Cybok and he was on his way to doing his he was on his way to being who he is in Star Trek V.
Yeah,
that'd be cool.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, I think I'm not ruling anything out. So
I'd like to see Discovery kind of standing on its own two feet, not needing that link back to original series. I don't think we need Spock there as a kind of reminder that this is Star Trek and there's a connection to the original. So I just like to see Discovery doing its own thing.
I would agree with you if it had been any other character. If they brought Kirk in, I'd say that was absolutely unnecessary bollocks to bring Kirk in, to bring Scotty in, to bring McCoy in, anyone like that. The only reason I'm happy about Spock, because purely it's Burnham's connection, and I think this is going to be Burnham's story about her relationship to Sarek and her relationship to Spock.
But I think with that, isn't there a danger that one character can kind of start to dominate?
There is a danger,
I think
are one episode in, we haven't even seen Spock, so I can't give that danger much credence.
But in season one of Discovery, I felt the show was best when it felt like an ensemble show.
Hmm.
And it seems to be moving further that way with the
yeah, with Pike.
Yes.
Showing up, the crew becoming more to the fore. So
I don't think we're going to lose that. But my hope is that Spock's appearance in the story is going to serve to build Burnham's character. I have my pet theory as of, you know, having only watched it a little over 24 hours ago, is that Burnham has reached a rapprochement with Sarek about their relationship. She's discovered part of Sarek and what motivates him that no one had expected to see, and she has a deeper understanding of him. And I think she feels she's reached this level of a relationship where she's much more comfortable with him and his motivations, and she just wants to help Spock. I think she feels that now she's hit this point, if she talked to Spock, she could help him resolve his conflicts with his father.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of her, like, I can solve a problem thing.
Mm.
And I think ultimately she's going to fail, because we know Spock and Sarek don't reconcile for some time. But I think that's part of her, a little bit of her arrogance, but a little also part of the way her relationship, and the part of the fact that's a really fucking dysfunctional family.
What about the Vulcan terrorists we see in season one.
We may or may not see them again.
Because that was something that we saw a bit of, and that was it.
Yeah, that was an interesting idea. It feels like
that carries on from Enterprise, isn't it?
I think they're going to be a constant.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I think at the minute we can dismiss them as an irritant on Vulcan, but whether or not they warrant a story of their own, we may see later. Mm. It's kind of speculation.
Can tie into that.
Yeah. I ideally hope that Cybok at least gets a mention. Because I want some acknowledgement of his existence.
Maybe he's touring with Garfunkel.
Cybok and Garfunkel. Oh, dear.
Are you going to Scarborough Fair?
Scarborough 5.
high five for that joke, man.
Yeah.
He get called dad and kicked off the podcast.
Are you going to Scarborough 5? Parsley 4 and Rosemary 3. These are all wonderful planets. and so on. Rosemary 3.
Rick, we just keep you here for the David Bowie doing the Enterprise theme impression, okay? Don't branch out.
You've done more dad jokes than I have.
I know, and you don't get called out for yours, so.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Well, so, sorry not. Hashtag sorry not sorry. does anyone have any more thoughts on Brother? The season 2 opener.
I thought it was a really good opener.
It was a great opener. I loved that they had some Power Ranger suits.
Yeah,
that was good.
What I really liked about those suits is they were incredibly unattractive.
That depends on your view of attractive, Jim.
They looked a bit like the Kelvinverse sort of
they did,
suits
yeah.
in Into Darkness, I think, where they were underwater and so yeah. I thought it was a really good opener.
It was spot on. It was really good.
It ticks a lot of boxes.
I felt there wasn't as much Saru as I would have liked, but there was. It was packed. So, and I think we'll get more Saru later.
Yeah, I like that Saru was reluctant to hand over command.
He was going to do it properly.
And that Pike was, wasn't a jerk about that. He was like, "Yeah, I understand where you're coming from."
He kind of gives command back to Saru briefly, doesn't he?
At one point, he does.
My mission's over.
And I liked that because Pike clearly wanted to make the right impression, and he didn't want to do wrong by Saru. He had some respect for him.
And also, Pike's going to change Lorca's tribal fortune cookie table for a proper kind of ready room.
I look forward to that actually. Yeah.
Get some chairs in there.
And he has that fortune cookie, of course.
A little bit foreshadowing there. Do we think it's Prime Lorca's return coming up, or?
Who knows? I think it's a nice reference to the cage, and then it's a proper fortune cookie, isn't it? Yeah. It's whatever you want from it, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
What I normally want is a delicious cookie treat. And I'm never disappointed.
I never used to... I always thought that except for the cookie bit protein. Was just like a shell for the fortune. I've never eaten a fortune cookie.
Yeah.
Haven't you?
They're okay. They're not a taste sensation.
But they're
sweet
and crunchy.
Yeah, I really liked the season 2 opener.
Yeah, I think...
I enjoyed it so much. It might even be one of my favourite episodes of Discovery so far. I don't know whether I'm just caught up in the hype of season 2 or whether I'll think that in the future. I thought it was great.
When I think back to when we were discussing the series opener for Discovery, and a certain one of our number was saying they weren't overwhelmed or underwhelmed, but whelmed.
Yes.
Quite directly.
Me.
That was you, yes. Yeah, but we're a lot more hyped and positive about it this year, so I think it's a strong return.
Yeah, I'd say I was overwhelmed. Not just whelmed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was really into this episode.
I was whelmed so hard my head spin.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Crikey. Well, on that note...
Yeah, I think it's time for us to say goodnight.
Yes, it is indeed.
Sayonara.
Good morning.
Our children will wake us up in about 3 hours.
3 hours. Oh my god.
No, not quite that soon. We haven't said goodbye.
Got to say goodbye.
Oh, sorry.
Goodbye. Okay, goodbye,
bye,
patrons.
Bye, patrons. Thank you so much. Bye.
Do you realise how incredible this is?
A British tradition!
You ever noticed her bum?
What?
Her bum.
Oh no!
I will say.
Fewer things.
Okay.
Enough of this self-indulgence.
Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, our website is www.lowerdecksradio.co.uk. You can reach us on the Twitters at 10backward, 10 being the number and backward being the word backward. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/10backwardpodcast. You can also email us at crew@lowerdecksradio.co.uk. On a personal, individual level, my Twitter is @WiltHerland. Rick Everson's Twitter is @TrekFanRick. And Rick Palmer's Twitter is @MrImhotep.
Hi, thank you again for listening to the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, you might consider supporting us. We have now have a Patreon where people can pledge small amounts to fund ongoing projects like keeping our website up to date, new audio equipment as we're going along, and potentially opportunities to expand our content. You can go look at this at patreon.com/lowerdecksradio. If you don't feel you can donate but would still like to support us, we would love it if you could subscribe to us on however you get your podcasts, your iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or we're on various third-party apps. And if you could leave us a review on any of those, that would be fantastic and would be very appreciative.
Thanks again for listening, and please tune in for more podcasts from the 10 Backward crew.
Let's make sure that history never forgets the name.
10 Backward?
Laddie, don't you think you should rephrase that?
10 Backward.
10 Backward.
Oh, I know what's wrong. Your pinky is, It's just really weird to say pinky to a captain. It's not like a very authoritative finger, but you know, but it's not on the right pad. Can I?
Kidding.
Oh my god, if I broke a captain.